After about the first hour and a half, so we figured we'd just leave it to whatever we had to tell you this morning to an hour, so an hour and 15 minutes. And in addition to that, I have a customer that has demanded to see me, and I like my customer. And so therefore, I'm going to be leaving here around 11:15, so if you have any tough questions, leave those for Bill. Okay. And also, before we get started, you know, there's something I learned a great deal this morning. I don't know about y'all, but it wasn't Dr. Acuff's discussion great. Yeah, so. But it really got me thinking. It was about, you know, headaches. You know, what causes headaches, and you know, all that. And as we're going through that, and I said, you know, that is absolutely right. Because anytime my wife says, "Not tonight," do I have a headache? And now I know where that's coming from. So thank you. But I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to express that to her. So anyway, with that, we'd like to at least get started here with the discussion. Yeah, so the deadly disease of conformity and how do we think outside the box. And we've learned some things on this about, you know, from where Bill sees, you know, things in terms of what is conformity and how do you really think about things. And when you're doing things kind of just from natural, you're doing things that you're being told to do, et cetera, and you're just doing things because that's just where it's always been done. You know, why not go question that? And then the other piece that I'm bringing into it is these, some of the experiences that I've had in the various jobs that I've had over my career and about what we do to challenge it or not challenge it and should have been challenged it in the past. So if you go to the next chart. So, again, all we're doing this here is just to provide just some thought-provoking things, and maybe they're not thought-provoking, about, you know, ways that possibly we can manage your possibilities and expand your role in the workplace. And, you know, and everybody, you know, whether or not you're in a manager job or, you know, versus a leadership job, at some point in time during your daily activities that you are doing something from a leadership perspective. And so if you're not, again, manager, you know, please think about it from a leadership role. So with that, Bill.
Slide because it kind of permeates what I talk about. First of all, I don't think any of us gain anything by listening to somebody else. I think until you decide mentally, any converted smokers in the room, anybody who quit smoking? I was a smoker for 30 years and I quit. Remember that experience? Let me just check with you. How many of you went through the experience that I was when you decided to quit? First of all, you went through the process. You decided to cut down. You know, I'll just smoke one cigarette every hour. And then next thing was that I'll buy cigarettes and I'll give them to my buddies and they will become kind of a guard and allocate me cigarettes. And of course, the third level basically was that you wouldn't buy any cigarettes at all. You would go around from bum from other people because you'd feel bad about that and eventually you would cut down the cigarettes. And of course, pretty soon people begin to look at you like you owed them money. They begin to hide from you because you were coming to borrow cigarettes. And eventually you make the decision, basically, if you're really going to quit smoking, guess who it involves? You. When I quit smoking for 30 years and came back, one of the things I discovered is when I decided to was mentally ready to quit smoking, guess what happened? It got easier because I was committed. And what I learned out of that experience was that no matter what the validity of the issue happens to be, until you're ready to assimilate the information into your own self, it makes no sense, or certainly you won't pursue it. So what I hope today is basically to trigger a few of you to basically challenge your own self, to kind of go outside the envelope or the box or whatever, but to challenge yourself when you go back to work and basically say, hey, wonder what it is that I can do different. And whether we like to admit it or not, how many of you have a passion for what you do? Incredibly important. Steve Jobs says this, you better know two things. You better know the product and the service, and you better have a passion for what you do. Now, I found it very intriguing that one of our major competitors, the Japanese, do not have seminars such as this. How many of you are familiar with Dr. Deming's 14 points? Remember the one 14 points was drive up fear. I read an article before I came out here, and it was about Toyota. And someone says, asked the president of Toyota, says, are you fearful? Do you have fear in the workplace? And he says, oh, yes. And a reporter grabbed that and went in and says, I thought you espoused Dr. Deming's philosophies to drive out fear. And they had a great time with it in the press. And then the president of Toyota came back and said, you need to understand what fear is in Toyota. Fear in Toyota is we will get worse than we are today, and our desire is to always be better. It's not fear of the employees. That's a big distinction, isn't it? Your company, whoever you happen to work for, needs a desire not to be good and better and all that kind of stuff. It needs to be the best it possibly can be given the conditions that it exists in. Does that require hard work? Someone once told me, I think it was Dr. Akoff, he said, there's no economic system known to mankind where you can give less and get more. That's why Dr. Deming said the one-minute manager is a book for idiots. Said leading and managing people is incredibly tough. So when we start talking about this thing and pursue this idea of conformity, I want you to think about conformity in a positive sense. It basically says that my organization basically uses about 20% of my mental capacity. Wonder what I do with the other 80%. A lot of you take it outside to your churches, to your little leagues, to your other organizations. So what I want to do is see if I can get you to think through that process a little bit, take you to that and basically go back tomorrow and get you to live in the universe you live in every day and say, maybe I can look at this differently. Maybe I can look at it in a way that where I can become a contributor to the success of this organization rather than someone who is just hanging on the outside. Hard to think outside the box to understand the box. How many of you are intellectually curious about your organization? I tell it to my son all the time. He'll come home and say, you know what those idiot bosses of mine did? And he goes through this whole thing and he expects great compassion from me. He gets none. Because my first question to him is what? Wonder why they did that. Because I want him to think about the possibility there may be a rational reason for that occurring. And when you don't think about other people's reasons and their rationality, someone once said all good lawyers write briefs for their opponents before they write their own. Maybe just maybe a good experience for all of you and all of us is when something goes wrong in the organization that looks absolutely stupid, maybe you ought to spend some time trying to understand what that is, because that intellectual curiosity will give you some insight into the organization. And let me share you with you, as John is a boss and myself as a boss for a number of years, if you're good, the organization will come find you. How many people in the room got people working for them? Raise your hand. How many of you know who the good people are in your organization who you'd like to promote? What do you know about them? Give me some of the adjectives that fits them.
Pardon?
Hardworking. Passion.
High energy.
Like, it's the energy. Pardon?
Persistent.
See, all those activities are there. We know what they mean. And if you're a boss, as John is, you see that stuff. When you walk at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and the people there who are committed, or that's when you watch and listen to them. You'll find a very interesting thing about organizations. People who are not committed to the organization will go into the local bar after work and bitch and moan about the personalities. People who have a passion for what they do will talk about how to do it better, what can I learn from it, and how can I increase my knowledge in front of that. Now, some of you have got some friends that the next time you see them will sound exactly like the conversation you had last time you were with them. Right? Have you got somebody? You know, you don't have to wait to see them next time. They know everything already. So if you listen to them for a while, you don't really have to see them because, hell, you already heard that. Right? How many of you got some friends that every time you see them, you look forward to see them because it's a new experience? It's a new knowledge base. It's a new learning experience for you. That's the kind of people you need to seek out in the workplace as well. I'll give you a statement that was, somebody said, this is a terrible place to work. Everybody here is screwed up. And the answer I heard from a friend of mine was, says, I decided to stay here because of this much mediocrity I had to succeed. Right? you hear that all the time. Let me suggest to you that mediocrity does not abound. And I go back to my friend Russ, who basically says you got to think about the whole. So when you go back into your company tomorrow, think about the whole and why are people doing what they're doing. I think you'll get a much different answer, and we'll begin to explore this issue of what can I contribute, as Peter Drucker said. The human urge to conform is what's perceived as certain cultural norms. How many of you have some cultural norms in your organization? Nobody in this room doesn't have any cultural norms. How many people inside your organization are very articulate in explaining all the things that you can't do here? It's what I call the busybody group. It's not the managers, but this is the folks who really know what truth is. They really know what truth is. You can't do this. But let me suggest to you, in most cases, when somebody tells you you can't do it, check it out. When I had my consulting business, I had a very unique capability. When I saw something stupid being done in an organization, I would say, why are you doing that? And they would say, it is written down. I like the Bible. It is written, thou shalt not. And I would say, gee, that's dumb. Go get me the paper that shows that document that shows don't do that and do something stupid. Want to know what I found? Over 90% of the time, I had the ability to predict a piece of paper that could not be found. You know why? Because people who are trained on the job, Dr. Deming used to talk about this, when you're trained on the job as at a verbal level, and people are telling you what can't be done and cannot be done, you've not looked it up. So when somebody says, this box is incapable of being expanded, go check the realities of that box and make sure it's true. Conforming norms, just the way things are done. When we join a new group, we become converts. Heard a great statement the other day. 106-year-old woman was talking. So what's the greatest thing about being 106? She said, no peer pressure. Right? Is that peer pressure in your organization? Absolutely. Russ was talking about it yesterday, I think. In the black community in Philadelphia, for example, anybody carrying a book got beat up. There's certain symbolism that exists in all kinds of organizations conform. Sometimes it's compliant. The most normal, however, when we feel embarrassment, discomfort of trying to introduce something. Are all changes good? Wait a minute. How many of you have been to a reorganization? You ought to all raise your hand because hell, we've all been through at least one. Everybody reorganizes because it's the illusion of progress, right? So all change is not necessarily good. But in some cases, in order to succeed, we have to introduce change that may be bad for the individual but good for the group. So you get back into that strategy. So conformity has both sides to it. We'll talk a little bit about that in a few moments. But realize that every day when you come to work, there are certain conformity norms that exist. Difficulty of the ambiguity of a task makes a difference, right? If somebody's smarter than me, what do you think I'm going to do about a task? You think I'm going to conform to the way they did it? I have no knowledge. Interesting statistic, and Russ talked a little bit about that this morning. 25 years ago, any supervisor could do 90% of the employee's job. You saw it whenever there was a strike, said, we'll bring the bosses in, they can do the job. What's the study show today? Manager can do less than 10% of the jobs that the employees do. So that threat is no longer out there because they don't know how to do what you do. So this issue of conformity makes a big difference in the competence. The perceived status. If I walk in and I'm a third-level boss and I want something and I want you to do something, what are you typically going to say to me? That's a dumb question, boss. You shouldn't ask me that, right? Now, you may go tell that to your buddy or your cohort, but you're not going to tell it to the boss. So the level of the boss makes a difference. Composition, group size, and how you'd like to stay together. I'll give you a military equation. Someone was recently talking about the military units in Iraq. And what they were saying, that they're over there fighting because they're fighting for this country, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They did some studies, and guess what you think they found out about the military unit? What is the single most important thing that they're fighting for? Keep their buddies alive. It was over family, it was over national unity, it was over... over everything else. In that moment, in that conflict, in that situation, they were fighting for the group, the small group, usually 8 to 10 people, keep their buddies alive. So this issue of group cohesion is incredibly important. Now we'll let John come in, and who's in that world today. John lives some of these things every day, so he'll give you a perspective on what that is.